Blog Talk Radio.
Friends, I want to thank you for joining us tonight for Progressive News Network's Film Noir intro. It's a jungle out there, friends. And if you progressives don't get up and stand up for your rights and stand up for our Constitution, it's only going to get more exciting. Remember that old Chinese proverb, may you live in interesting times. Well, friends, brothers and sisters, we are in interesting times. No question about that. Tonight, we've got an excellent show. I've got that fantastic progressive Mark Pafford, representative in Florida's Congress, Florida's House, with some really good news on that the voting restrictions that the Republicans are trying to force on this state. He's going to talk about that first. Then we've got a wonderful progressive roundtable. We're going to have Amy Tidd, Gwendolyn Holden Berry, Susan Nylon, and Luis Cuevas. A wonderful bunch of progressive journalists and activists who are going to give you their insight on some of the challenges we face today and tomorrow. Okay, boy, some interesting stories in the news. Of course, as always, we have some interesting stories to talk to you about, and I do want to mention a couple of things that are really, really critical. Don't forget, if you can help out on the Wisconsin battle, you know, right now progressives have so many challenges, and the right and the Koch brothers and Alec are really fighting the battle, and we're kidding ourselves if we think it's anything short of that. And for those of you who have a knowledge of Eastern ways, well, you know, the Tai Chi, the karate, where you use your opponent's strength against himself, always a good plan. But in addition to the Wisconsin battle, there are ways you can get involved. There are ways you can join in. Make sure that you put your back into it. Also, our good friends at PDA are working very hard. They're working very diligently to make sure that progressives are being elected across the United States. There are many legislative battles that you can participate in. You may not have dollars to give. If you got a little time, I want you to get in touch with Mike Fox, a progressive activist in Florida who's working on coordinating activists, helping nationally just by making a few phone calls. You can get in touch with Mike Fox at PinellasPDA@yahoo.com. I'll give you that address again in just a little while. Again, it's PinellasPDA@yahoo.com. He's coordinating phone calls. He can get you the information how you can help get progressives elected across the United States. In Florida here, we don't always have progressive activists like Mark Pafford, like Scott Randolph. We don't always have that. But you can help right now, because if Congress doesn't get more progressive, friends, it's only going to get more exciting. A couple other stories you should know about. Of course, the ongoing danger of Fukushima, the disaster that just keeps on giving. There's a news story that radiation experts are suggesting, with that debris coming ashore in the West Coast, they're suggesting that police start being given Geiger counters so that when they go near the water, when they go near the sea, they can be detecting and checking to see what radiation is coming ashore with that debris that's washing ashore across the Pacific. That big water is no longer a barrier to ionic radiation. Also, another story you should know about. Many of you who follow politics noticed that the Obama administration has had some real terrible luck recently with advocates going out there and advocating, whoops, not so much for Obama as for Romney. We had the curious case of Cory Booker, who went out and said, hey, don't be picking on those Wall Street boys, you know, I mean, they're just, they're just ripping you off. And then, since that was not enough, and the Obama administration has this interesting love affair with Wall Street, they sent their good friend Bill Clinton out, who praised Romney and saying that the GOP nominee has a sterling business career. And he urged Obama to call off his campaign broadsides on Romney's time as CEO of Bain Capital that loaded companies with debt, took the money, and fired the people. Hey, cashing out those companies was good business for Mr. Mitt. So listen, if it's good for Uncle Mitt, it's good for the USA. And if it's good for Wall Street, well, who cares about the worker bees, you know? This is good for Wall Street. And it is kind of curious. You wonder, did they just pick the wrong guys, or are they trying to jujitsu the message? I mean, a lot of our progressive friends who see nothing but the bright side of the progress that Brother Obama's made always are telling us, listen, you know, he's up against a lot of trouble. Well, he is, no question about it. He was given a big ditch, and nobody would have wanted to jump in that ditch without a parachute, that's for sure. But it is curious that Cory Booker and Brother Bill Clinton went out there to defend Obama and end up defending Mitster. Isn't that interesting? Bill Clinton defended Mitt Romney at a time at Bain. Does that help Obama? Former President Bill Clinton's praise of Mitt Romney's business career seemed to deliberately undercut the Obama campaign's attack. So why did he do it? Pro-business Dems, a man who's been governor and has a sterling business career, crosses the qualification threshold. And since then, when Democratic candidates have seemed to push the party back toward a more explicit economic populism, you know, being for the people instead of for corporations, or, oh no, appear to demonize big business, Clinton has often signaled his disapproval. After Al Gore ran on a slogan, the people versus the powerful, in 2000 and lost, although barely, by the thread of a Supreme Court skirt, Clinton later commented that he thought Gore's message hadn't really worked. And Clinton's defense of Romney, or rather his implied criticism of Obama's criticism of Romney, may seem like a slap in the face. Interesting way to endorse him. But if Clinton truly believed the economic populism is a losing strategy for Dems, well, you can make Cory Booker on that one. Our first Fukushima story of the night. This is from Reuters, the massive earthquake and tsunami that hit Fukushima, Japan last year wreaked havoc in the sky as well, disturbing electrons in the upper atmosphere, NASA has reported. Waves of energy from the quake and tsunami that were so destructive on the ground reached into the ionosphere, a part of the upper atmosphere that stretches from 50 to 500 miles above the Earth's surface. The ionosphere is the last, thinnest part of the atmosphere where ultraviolet radiation breaks up molecules and leaves a haze of electrons and ions. Images released on Friday, NASA showed how the earthly disturbance from the March 11, 2011 quake and tsunami were echoed in movement of electrons far aloft. This motion was monitored by tracking the GPS signals between satellite and ground receivers. Scientists have seen this phenomenon before from tsunamis in Samoa in 2009, Chile in 2010. The Japanese event, however, occurred in a region more closely monitored by the dense network of GPS receivers, NASA said. Higher radiation. Oh, my God. How many times are they going to announce that there's higher radiation found than was reported? Well, once again, friends, it strikes. Massive earthquake and tsunami hit Fukushima. Also released... let's see. let's see here. Oh, that radiation was almost 2.5 times the amount first estimated by Japanese safety regulators. Tokyo Electric said its own analysis conducted over the last year put the amount of radiation released in the first 3 weeks of the accident about, they're saying 1/6 the radiation released during the Chernobyl accident. Well, of course, we can trust them now because, now, they're telling us the truth because, now everything's okay. More contamination news. It says they're finding up to 1 million becquerels in the soil. Japanese farmers and people living in the region say, you know, we're pretending not to see the radiation in the soil. We can't eat the food we grow here, but we're forced to live here. Evidently, they're not doing the relocation that they thought they were going to do. Okay, and although the city has measured between 1 million becquerels to 500,000 becquerels inside the urban district, Minamisoma City Councilor Kiyoshi Oyama reports that they have found 10 million becquerels of cesium in a sample from the area west of Tokyo. They've also found 24,000 becquerels of radioactive cesium in a soil sample 250 kilometers from Fukushima. Fukushima workers are concerned about the ground settling at the plant, and they're wondering what's going to happen when TEPCO starts pumping out that hundreds of thousands of tons of groundwater. What's going to happen to the plant then? And by the way, on another front, a GOP spokesman was slammed for the "let's hurl acid at female senators" comment. Jay Townsend, GOP spokesman, said, "let's hurl acid at those female Democratic senators." A spokesman for Representative Nan Hayworth, Republican of New York, is facing criticism after advocating violence against female Democratic senators in a Facebook post. Jay Townsend, official campaign spokesman for the freshman representative, went on in a vicious online rant Saturday when he began taunting a constituent who voiced criticism about an earlier post on gas prices. "Listen to Tom. What a little bee he has in his bonnet. Buzz, buzz," Townsend wrote. That's where you want to do it. You want to insult those constituents, don't you say? Don't you know? Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's enough fresh news for now. I want to thank my co-producer for all her help. And now I'm going to bring you a wonderful little recorded segment with Representative Mark Pafford on the voter access issue. Here we go. Representative Pafford.
I'd like to welcome Florida House Representative Mark S. Pafford of District 88.
For you.
Once in a while we get some good news.
Yeah, it's actually wonderful. You know, I wish it had occurred a little earlier, but you take it when you get it in Florida.
Sir, let's talk just for a second in the overview what this good news is. It seems that once again our colleagues in the Florida government have decided that they need to solve a non-existent problem and clean up the voter rolls. They seem to get this religion every 4 years. And many of us who pay attention to politics have seemed to notice that the Republicans do this, trim the rolls of Democrats. And I know you introduced a bill, 1189, and now we've got this judge's ruling. Sir, where do you think we are right now?
Well, you know, I think the judge's ruling is actually, it was a huge ruling, a huge victory for people who know what this purging really is. And you know, I would submit that the purging is merely an effort to get rid of Democrats that show up on Election Day. So, you know, the 48-hour, the ruling is great, but I'm still very hopeful that the Washington court that's going to determine what the effects of 1355 are in the five counties in Florida that's historically, you know, been suppressed. I'm hoping that, you know, they toss the law out and therefore eliminate the law throughout the state of Florida. You can't have two standards for election laws. And so, you know, I'm looking forward to it. Unfortunately, you know, I heard the other day this thing may come in August, and you know, the longer it takes, the worse the problem gets. And you know, if a governor like Rick Scott can be elected with 61,000 votes, every vote is going to be very, very important. And so, the quicker the ruling, the better.
Let me ask you this, sir: you are one of those people who's doing the best kind of work, protecting your constituents, protecting the Constitution, because you know. If there was ever a constitutional issue, the right to vote clearly is a constitutional issue. Let me ask you a second, I think, as important an issue. If this is a constitutional matter, and this judge's ruling, and I think the next ruling we're going to hear is going to be the same, if you write unconstitutional laws that are aimed to restrict voting, if you make the process of getting a driver's license so complicated and so fraught with hurdles, this is clearly actions to undermine the electorate. Is there no penalty? Is there nothing we can get these people held responsible for this unconstitutional, anti-democratic matter?
It's a great question, and I don't think there is, you know, for this type of behavior. Unfortunately, it's the legislature most of the time that we have the authority to do what we want. And unfortunately, we have people in the legislature who are just the charts in terms of their philosophies and in terms of sheer arrogance that they will pass whatever they like. You know, I think the penalty would come, in theory, by the way, if we had, you know, good campaign finance laws that started, you know, ensuring that all these dollars couldn't be used by these folks trying to get reelected, and creating a fair landscape for people who want to run against some of these incumbents. They say showing up to vote will do it. Well, that will. And we will gain some seats away from the supermajority in November. There's no doubt about that. The question is, you know, will it be enough to actually cause true debate? So these type of outrageous, unconstitutional laws that we're passing, or ballot amendments in this case, don't see the light of day. And, you know, the only way that occurs is people, voters, getting out and understanding the truth behind some of this garbage that is being placed before us in November on these ballot issues, and also, you know, voter suppression issues like 1355. I mean, if the electorate isn't educated, we're going to suffer the same consequences year after year after year. You know, somebody actually passed on a Tea Party email to me about the voter suppression, and if you were to read that, your head might pop off. It basically said that, you know, sure enough, these activist courts, activist judges are pushing back poor Governor Scott, and all he's trying to do is rid the voter rolls of, you know, people who've died and fell in and on and on and on. Their take is completely 180 degrees different than what you and I are talking about. You and I actually have the data which suggests there is no fraud going on. You know, they couldn't even point to fraud on the House floor when this came up a few years ago. However, you've got, and I'll just say it, ignorant people being involved in politics, and I'm talking elected and non-elected, who aren't doing their homework. And unfortunately, because of a supermajority and the way the electoral process is rigged in this state, they have control. And it's a very, very frightening situation that we have right now.
You know, when I look at the situation where they're making just the simple process of getting a driver's license very, very complicated, even for people who've had Florida driver's licenses for years. That's your photo ID. Then they've got these cyclical every 4 years of vote purges that they've come up with without any evidence of the fraud. And then you've got, you hate to say it, but you've got a compromised voting technology with all too often no evidence that your vote in one particular direction has been counted. You've essentially got, and there's no other word for it than a coup d'etat.
Sure.
There's just no democratic process that's involved anymore.
It's a modern-day coup d'etat, and it's very dangerous. And, you know, unfortunately, it kind of boils down to supervisors of elections who are making these calls. And, you know, in Palm Beach County, we have a great supervisor. Throughout the state, we have great supervisors, both Democrat and Republican, who realize that this stuff is what it is, and that's just, you know, a way to rig the elections. And they are standing up, and you know, this Department of Justice pushback on the voter roll, you know, halting what they were doing, the purging, I think gave some credibility and an excuse for a lot of supervisors who aren't as bold to push back to finally end what they were doing. And you know, it's going to be a team effort, but it's going to be a battle all the way.
I was very pleased to find out. I called our supervisor here in Martin County, and she said that, number one, there were only two requests made from her for the state, and they're not going to do it. They're not going to purge those names.
Yep, and thank goodness people are using their brains. You know, and as I said, you know, both Democrat and Republican supervisors from around the state, they agree that what's happening is wrong. Unfortunately, you've got a governor who himself is a just complete ignorant governor when it comes to governing. He came into the job I think that can be, you know, proven merely by the fact of the number of lawsuits that have been filed against him, the number of lawsuits that he's failed to, you know, win. It's just outrageous what's happening. But, you know, this is also a guy who has a history of, you know, bucking the law. Unfortunately, now he's the governor. He's got the people's money to defend his positions with. You would think, if you were a conservative thinker and perhaps a member of the Tea Party, that that type of thing doesn't make economic sense, good fiscal sense. You know, if you're knowingly moving forward on laws that you know are blatantly unconstitutional, yet you move forward and you know that's going to cause lawsuits and spending, I would think the Tea Party and some of those folks maybe, you know, push back, but we haven't seen that yet.
Well, you know, one other thing I wanted to talk to you about was the fact that you and I, who are clearly progressive partisans, we have objections to this. When a group that is nonpartisan, like the League of Women Voters, who are simply trying to make sure that citizens have their vote and are able to be registered to vote, when a group like that is, quote, scared off from trying to register voters, this is clearly not a partisan issue. Tampering with the election system is tampering with the very foundations of democratic government. And it just boggles the imagination. What do you think the next step is going to be?
Let me clarify that. In which discussion are we having? The 1355?
Yeah, let's go ahead and say 1355.
1355, I think, you know, my hope is, from what we've seen, that the Washington court that's reviewing the five counties and how 1350 applies there, will basically say, look, 1355, these specific components, they are absolutely intruding in a voter's capacity to, you know, decide their future. I am very hopeful that 1355 and the components they looked at, the major components, will basically, there'll be an injunction against those. Once that occurs, and I'm not an attorney, but I've got some feelers out to figure out what happened, I think we'll be able to go back, revert back to the system prior to 1355 being approved by the legislature and signed by Governor Scott. If that's the case, you know, hopefully a lot of these efforts to suppress our freedoms will end. And, you know, in November, we'll have the number of folks showing up to vote that we hope show up, and we've done our job. You know, let the normal advocacy and airing of views occur before November 6th. That's the 1355 piece. Whether or not, you know, my bill is ever heard, I don't know. You would think we'd have to change the law to basically match what the federal opinion is going to be. In terms of, let's see, that was voter suppression, the voter purging, I think that's something we're going to see continue. You know, obviously what they did this time, they didn't even get pre-clearance. They just went ahead and did it. And, you know, they know damn well exactly what they need to do, but they are completely unimpressed with society's laws and how we govern ourselves. And they're going to continue to push the envelope, and we're going to have to continue to push back vigorously.
Do you think there's any hope the Justice Department's going to step in? Clearly, Florida has a major problem with getting citizens access to voting.
Yeah, I think there is a very good possibility. It unfortunately comes down to politics. You know, if it's the Justice Department that comes in, how's that going to look for the Obama administration? Does President Obama feel that that's the type of, you know, intrusion that he could defend on the campaign trail? All these campaigns are going to have to determine for themselves how they deal with this type of thing. You know, personally, I think it would be great if the Carter Center or somebody came down to Florida. It sounds pretty pathetic that we'd have to use a Carter Center when, you know, they're used in developing democracies throughout the world.
Well, clearly we have a developing democracy.
and we're being nice, aren't we?
generous.
That is a possibility, I guess. You know, I mean, unfortunately, the state has had, 14, 16 years of complete majority rule, super majority rule governance. And, you know, they are doing everything they can. And you know, it's almost like this perfect storm. If you can't get them with voter suppression, then you want to add redistricting, you know. If redistricting doesn't work, then go ahead and start purging the voter rolls. They're doing numerous things here to achieve the same outcome, and that is keeping Democrats away from the polls, keeping minorities away from the polls, limiting people's ability to vote on a regular ballot when they know 50% of provisional ballots are thrown away after the elections. And, you know, who does that hit? It's kids like my daughter is at UCF who will vote. You know, it hits people who are in foreclosure, who are losing their home. They have new residents. It hits the most vulnerable people and tend to not think about it, but a lot of vulnerable people happen to be Democrats.
One last question, if I may, sir. Unfortunately, Florida is not the only state that's been impacted by this. I'm just going to call it tampering with the Democratic process, tampering with the electorate, tampering with citizens' access to the means to control the government. Whether you want to point to Alec, whether you want to point to candidate Clinton called a vast right-wing conspiracy, clearly there are forces at work in this country that are trying across the board to limit democracy. I can't think of a greater threat. You know, you can point to some people with box cutters in a cave in Afghanistan, but here we've got people, homegrown terrorists trying to undermine the government. I can't imagine a greater threat. Do you think that there's going to be a greater awareness of this threat to democracy?
Directed where? I missed that.
What I meant was Florida's not the only state. These same kind of laws, these same kind of voting restrictions are occurring in state after state.
Yeah.
I'd like to hope that there's going to become a greater awareness, at least among the medium to high information voters. Clearly the low information voters aren't going to pay any attention anyway.
You know, and I think it's you know, as you're talking, I'm kind of refining what I'm going to say. But, you know, when you say correctly that, you know, they're basically destroying, they're dismantling our democracy and our structure and everything we tout throughout the world as being finest, in its place, what they're promoting is very, very simple, and that's corporate greed. You know, it's an elitist structure. It's the Bush type people of the world who, you know, claim, for instance, as an example, they're making education better, and we certainly haven't seen an improvement in education if you look at their own FCAT. However, you can go further. You know, his educational reform is basically corporate backed educational reformers. I mean, it is the takeover of everything that we define as part of our great society. It is removal from the pockets of the everyday man and woman in Florida and throughout the country of their ability to be part of an economy, to be part of the market, to be the engine that makes us the premier market throughout the world, free market. And when you remove those dollars from those people's pockets, the people that spend the money buying cars, buying things for their kids to go to school, everything from books to paper to a new car, you're basically destroying your market. In the end, you're actually making it less profitable, I would argue, to the large corporations. But they're not worried about the next 5 to 10 years. They're worried about basically hard-picking, for no better explanation, the market immediately so they can cash and pocket and invest these dollars and make more money. We have basically succumbed to corporate greed, and at some point it stopped. And unfortunately, I think it makes its biggest impact on the people who can change it at the ballot box when it begins to truly affect their ability and change the way they live. And it actually makes a quality of life change in their own lives. And that's what we're seeing. Sadly, it's come to that. But hopefully people will listen to this show, they'll be reading the paper, they'll understand that huge corporations are robbing them blind. And they will begin fighting back and connecting the politicians that say they're doing something and do it versus, at least in this state, the supermajority of politicians who run the place for the last 16 years who's doing it and are lying flatly to their constituents.
Well, Representative Pafford, I want to thank you for the work that you're doing, standing up for the citizens' rights in so many ways. I just need to say thank you, sir. Keep up the good work, and we hope to talk to you again soon, sir.
All right. Hey, thanks for the time. You have a great day.
Thank you, brother. You too. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that was Representative Mark Pafford, and giving us his perspective on some of the voters' rights issues that we face here in the state of Florida. Well, my first guest should be with us in just a few minutes, but let me read some of the other news items that struck me this week as worthy of discussion. One of the other stories that is I think quite newsworthy is, you know, we have a Justice Department that hasn't seen fit to punish anyone, bring anyone to trial from Wall Street, no one of any of these corporations, credit banks, etc., that have basically destroyed our country were brought to trial, and yet they saw the time and the money and resources, and they put the former candidate Edwards on trial. Very interesting application of the Justice Department. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I think I've got my first guest here. I'd like to welcome with you Ms. Amy Tidd.
Well, hello, Rick. How are you doing tonight?
Real good, real good. Amy, and yourself?
Oh, doing just fine. I really enjoyed your interview with Mark Payford. He's a great legislator, and he had a lot of good things to say about the voter suppression.
Yeah, it's a terrible issue that we face, and as you know, we face it. People across the United States are seeing the same sort of thing. You know, I asked each of my my guests to think of a couple ideas that they want to discuss. What's on your mind? What's on your agenda these days?
Well, I'm definitely concerned about the voter suppression, because although the League of Women Voters has to be commended because they brought these voter suppression issues to court, and they did win the 48-hour turn-in, because it used to be you had 10 days after you got a voter registration to turn it in. And they changed it to being 48 hours, which was unworkable. So the court threw that out. Hello?
Yes, yes.
Okay, but the court threw that out, but what people aren't talking about is that the court didn't throw out some of the other things. And one of the things I'm very concerned about is the address change provision. Because right now, if you go to vote on election day in a different county, you're not going to be allowed to vote a regular ballot. Whereas before, you could change your address on election day. So a lot of our students who are going to go vote this fall, they're going to sign up at their high school and then they're going to go off to college. Well, they're not going to get to vote. And they'll say, well, okay, well, you get to vote a provisional ballot. Well, people don't realize that provisional ballots aren't required to be counted. I was looking it up, and in 2004, there was 1 million ballots that weren't counted, provisional.
Well, that certainly wouldn't have made any impact on the Gore-Bush campaign, would it?
yeah. Well, it was a big problem, and so that is one of the things that they managed to keep in there. And so people are going to people really need to make sure that them and their family check with the supervisor and make sure that they are registered and haven't been purged. Now, I did check with our supervisor election about the names that Scott sent to see what they were doing, and they did receive 8 names and went ahead and sent letters. And they told me on Friday, well, because the DOJ said that they couldn't do it, they weren't going to follow up anymore. But then I wondered, well, are they going to send these voters a letter saying you can vote? Or are these voters just going to think that they're, you know,
right, terminated,
not allowed, and then they just don't vote anyway? So some of the damage could be done even with what's happened.
Do you know, did they, I didn't hear anything about them rescinding the penalties either.
No. They rescinded the 48 hours. They rescinded that you had to sign a form saying that, you know, the volunteer turn-in of the names and all that, I think that was rescinded along with the penalty, with the form that you signed saying there's going to be a penalty. But there was a penalty before. I did voter registration in 2010 and 8. And in 2010, there was a penalty if you didn't turn it in within 10 days. So that they think they may have increased the penalties, but those were not new.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, so I really, really hope that our supervisor of elections contacts the League of Women Voters and the groups that used to do voter registration and gets them back on the job.
How many
possible voters?
I called our local election supervisor, Ms. Vicki Davis, and she said that although she had received two names, she was not going to follow up. And I was very impressed because our county has a notorious reputation for being leaning.
Yeah. Well, you did better than us, so that's excellent to hear.
Well,
but it's
all the
people who haven't gotten registered that I'm concerned about. I mean, I know normally people have been out for, you know, all year registering, and here in Brevard County, our voter rolls have actually dropped in the last year. So we have less people registered now than a year ago.
Sure. And, you know, when you get the economic disincentive out there and the fatigue factor and all that, yeah, I think we can expect a rather modest turnout. Hopefully they won't have a modest turnout in Wisconsin.
I'm holding my breath, and I've actually been making some calls and trying to help out because that's
good for you.
As Wisconsin goes, so will America.
Yeah, I think you're right. Listen, let me bring on my next guest. I've got, oh my, here we go. Let me bring on, I think this is Miss Susan Nylon. Welcome, Susan.
It is. Hello, welcome. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's a real pleasure, Susan. Let me introduce Miss Amy Tidd to you, who's already on.
Hi, Amy. I'm a fan of yours. I follow you quite often.
Well, thank you. We got to keep working together.
Yes,
Susan, let me ask you this. You know, I asked everyone to think about an issue or two that they want to bring to the table. I know you had a real busy day and it was pretty complicated. Did you have a chance to think of an issue that you'd like to discuss?
Well, I'm not actually sure what everybody else has discussed. And unfortunately, I've been at a funeral. In fact, I'm still here right now of a very good friend of mine. And, you know, it puts things in the circumspect when you recognize the value of everything through what you lose. And my friend not only is someone who was close to me, but he was also a union member and a very good Democrat and very passionate about civil rights. And I look at all the things that we think is easy to hold on to and we think is given to us through our Constitution. And, you know, if you think through all the decades that we have fought long and hard to gain these rights, how easy they disappear just by taking them for granted or just by thinking that, you know, we've done enough or we don't have to do anymore. And one of my concerns, as always, is after the 2008 election, when we had so many people turn out to make that election happen, and so many people, not only from our own communities, but from across the waters, internationally would come, flew in to help with our election. So many people crossed party lines to help with this election. And then all of a sudden, we kind of just sat back and said, we're good, we're done, we worked very hard, and, you know, we're going to let somebody else take over. And the problem is no one did. And I look at my friend Michael, who we just lost this week, and the one thing that I knew about Michael is that he was incredibly constant. You know, whether he was being a good friend, whether he was being a good union member, or he was being a good Democrat, he was always there, and he knew the value of that you can never rest on your laurels, and you can never rest on the fact that you just accomplished something really great. Now we're done. And my concern is always that. I understand how tired we get and how, you know, I remember how I felt and how I looked after the last presidential election, and I was just grateful that I was no longer recognizable in the photos because I had really let myself go. And I was ready to take a break. But unfortunately, the people that we fight against, the ideals and the values that we oppose, they don't take a break. In fact, they keep going. And my concern is always that, you know, we end up playing catch up, and we end up losing. And there's been so many things that have eroded our civil liberties in the past 4 years. And while everybody always focuses on the federal level. I keep telling everybody to look at the state level. Keep an eye on what is happening within your state, almost to the point where forget the talking points that you hear in national television, you know, or national radio, and start looking at what your local officials are doing. That is actually more significant than anything that's going to happen at the federal level. I believe there were 180 laws that were passed in the past 2 years that infringed upon our voters' rights. 180, and you can go through the list of all the things that we thought were a given. We thought all these rules were passed in the 60s and the 70s and all the way up to the 90s that we were good. And you turn around, here we are in 2012, and we're still fighting the same battles. And that is that's my focus.
Well, you know, and the thing is, you're right. You're very right. And, you know, some of us said, well, you know, we've elected a multiracial president. That means that some of our racial worries can be rested. But that doesn't take into consideration, as right as you are, some of these people who want to roll back our rights, they want to refight the battles of the last century,
mm-hmm.
not content to take us back to the 50s. They want to take us back to the 1850s. And that is a huge threat to our civil liberties, to the
mm-hmm.
rights that we see that go back to the Magna Carta, to the, you know, centuries ago, the right of habeas corpus, the right to a
mm-hmm.
fair trial, the right to a jury, the right to a trial when you're accused instead of summary execution by some administrative authority. These are battles we thought we won a long, long time ago. Thanks for bringing that up. And let me bring another voice in, and then we should be able to start our roundtable in just a few minutes, okay? I think we've got the honorable and talented Luis Cuevas. Luis, welcome. No, is this not Luis?
You have me.
Oh, Miss Gwen. Welcome, Gwen. Hi.
I'm sorry, I should have said Gwen. Condolences, Susan. I want to say that. Condolences.
Thank
you.
I appreciate that.
You know, she's quite right, Rick. The local level is very important, and politics are local. Yet if you take a look at the conservative neocon efforts, they're coordinated across the nation. Heck, I think they're coordinated across the world. But here's the thing. Our Democratic Party has done nothing, neither has this president, to help the very significant fight in another community that stood up for labor. This Tuesday in Wisconsin, where is the support that those folks needed from the DCCC, the Democratic Party, and from the president? It's not been there. These folks are fighting that fight against Scott Walker alone. If we have one with this governor, do you think that just because Debbie Wasserman Schultz is in Miami, we're going to get any backup? I mean, that's a question I have, you know?
You make a good point, Gwen. I'm going to bring up a variety of issues, some of which are in the state, some of which are national, but have a state impact. But let me bring in our final roundtable guest. I've got Lewis here. Hold on 1 second, everybody. Lewis, welcome.
Hey, how are you?
Very good,
hey,
sir.
Lewis.
Very good.
Hey,
hi,
how
Lewis
are
and
you?
Susan.
Yes. Good friends.
We've got Susan, we've got Gwen, we've got Amy, and it's a wonderful roundtable here. Lewis, I asked everyone to bring a special issue of their own to the table. What'd you bring us, sir?
Yes, well, great company here, first of all. One thing that I've been looking at is Wisconsin. We need to get things going there. There's an incredible amount of money that is being thrown into Wisconsin by the Republicans. The quantities are insane. This is a matter of the corporations versus the people. So we need to get an army of people to overcome
right.
that money. That's the only one thing that can do it. Just very quickly, if people can just go over to the wearewisconsin.org. wearewisconsin.org, and there are very many ways that they can volunteer to do all kinds of stuff. It doesn't matter where you are. You can do it from your own office, room, whatever you are at. You don't have to get out. It's really important that you do that. The other one thing that concerns me really greatly, because the lackadaisical attitude towards it, it is just incredible, is the situation of the Gulf of Mexico.
Yeah,
I am very worried about that. You know, everybody is really throwing everything under the carpet, and the conditions in the Gulf are not that good. I mean, a clean beach does not make for a good environment out there. You know, that's only something of a makeup on the outside.
Bless
but the reality
you,
is
Lewis.
What's going on in the water. Yes.
Bless you for bringing it up.
Yeah, because, you know, I'm so worried. It's just amazing that we haven't seen, and Progressive Push, we're trying to get something going with this. We're trying to see if we can get a Gulf States initiative to, you know, get action. All the representatives and senators and governors, you know, and all the politicians of the Gulf area to get somehow into a summit to see what can be done to save the Gulf, not treat it like a cesspool that we can throw all kinds of stuff in there, you know, and just, you know, nothing going. You know, there needs to be some discussion, and it's just not happening. And the Chamber of Commerce, you know, wants to quiet down everybody and say nothing is happening there. Everything is back to normal, you see. But if you ask the fishermen throughout the region, all the way back to Alabama, Louisiana, they know what's going on, you see. And they are the ones who have not gotten the best of the help, as much as it's the big hotel lines and the, you know, that type of thing. So those are the two main issues that right now have us, you know, pretty pretty upset.
Well, thank you, Lewis. There's a series of issues that I want to bring up. That I want to get your feedback on. I'm going to kind of tick down the list and ask each of you for your reaction. You know, our education system in Florida, which so many of us lament for so many reasons, you know, we just had this another year of basic what is the Bush education schemes here. The testing is reality. Testing is the way. And yet we see once again the results of this testing is in lowered results. And, of course, the states repaired that by just adjusting the numbers. And I want to ask each of you to give me some feedback on this the FCAT results that we just heard that were so interesting. Amy, would you react first, dear?
Well, they're doing the FCAT testing and what the – it's basically the Jeb Bush people that have been working for years to do this are actually starting to achieve their goal. They're trying to make public education look bad so that we'll take money from it and give it to the charter schools. And so that's why these tests are designed to make the public schools look bad, is because they want to switch the money over. So unfortunately, that's what's happening.
I know you have children, and your children were the product of public schools here in Florida. Have you seen a progressive deterioration in the Maine?
Well, what's happened, mine are in college, and what's happened is that they've increased the tuition. My daughter, when she started, her scholarships covered everything, and when she ended, they were only covering half of what the school cost. So they've increased tuition, they've cut funding for colleges. So at the college level, it's a big problem. The lower level, you're definitely seeing a cutback in good classes, and it's, I think the teachers are very demoralized. So it's Gwen, not been good for education at all.
Thank you, Amy. Gwen, you want to react to this FCAT debacle?
I think that Amy makes really, really bright points about it. And I have a nephew who's in college, and he's extraordinarily worried, and he plays football. He's one of the important members of the team, and he's worried about his scholarships and what it's going to cost him to get through the last 2 years of school. And I have to say, Margaret Hoffman was just here, a friend who is a teacher in the local school system here in Palm Beach County, and she is, as it was said, demoralized by this whole system that follows that disaster capitalism, you know, Chicago School of Economics, let's have the corporations take over all communities in the world kind of thing going on here. And it's a go-along to get-along for many teachers who have devoted their life to teaching children who are now watching the quality of education fall from their hands. And, of course, you know, the conversation, if you bring it up amongst people who are reasonably intelligent, having a discussion about the lack of critical thinking from even college students these days, the ability to critically think, it's just frightening. I think Amy said a lot with what she had to say.
Thank you. Susan, would you like to react? I know you have a youngster right now.
I do, and I'm also a former teacher that taught during the wonderful time of the FCAT. And, you know, I personally, I've always thought that the FCATs and similar testings have always been a joke. They've never been a clear evaluation of what a student learns and what is actually being taught in the classroom. I agree with Amy when she said that, you know, it's an insult to the teachers that their pay is attached to the performance of these tests. And the fact that we know, you know, my son is in middle school right now, and it's been this way since he started school, that a good portion of the year is spent teaching the tests, and no other education goes on. And the fact that we're allowing our educational system to erode, even with the fact of they don't teach cursive writing anymore, they don't teach grammar and you know, punctuation, and the fact that the FCAT, you know, bit them back this year, I thought was hysterical, because I couldn't believe they would have expected anything less. And the fact that they dialed it back and you know, so their scores would go up again, just shows the hypocrisy of the exam itself. And, you know, I'm surprised there's not a bigger movement amongst the parents to actually boycott the FCAT. I don't know what the value it is to the parents. The students don't really benefit from it, and if they're not, if they don't score well, they get penalized from it. So I'm surprised we're still actually talking about it.
Good point. Lewis, do you want to weigh in on this, sir?
Yes, I mean, wonderful assessment right now. I've been a teacher in the state of Florida. I taught from 1977 through 1988 in the public school system before I went on to teach at the University of Florida and Santa Fe Community College. But I'll tell you one thing. The problem with education is that we keep reinventing the wheel all of the time. And way back in the 70s, we were getting this drive, this push to teach to the test. Because they teach to the test, they will learn. This fallacy has been going on for years.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things,
I agree.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that I, you know, go into a different way of dealing with this is that the Republicans were targeting our school systems years ago, decades ago. And the one thing they did was to go in and take over the school, textbook adoption committees in the school boards, and then the school boards themselves. And they have packed the school boards with their people, and what they're doing is throwing the system, you know, out the window, and making it possible for these other individuals to come in for profit schools where everything is expendable. Students are expendable. And reality is that what they want to do is a school-to-jail, you know, program. Yeah, there are actually statistics and studies that have been made of how school dropouts will end up in jails. And so by figuring out how many school dropouts there will be, they can then figure out how many they will have for the you know, jail industrial complex to throw those kids in there. And that's what's going on.
Wow.
It sounds crazy, but that's what's going on.
No, it's very true. Very true.
Yeah.
Another topic I wanted to bring up is in this very complicated situation up in Sanford, where the Trayvon Martin case, the alleged shooter, Mr. Zimmerman, was initially not charged and then charged and then released and then just recently reincarcerated. This has so many downsides. I was wondering if any of you want to weigh in. Let me ask Amy. Start back at Amy. Amy, do you have any reaction you'd like to share regarding this terrible situation of Mr. Zimmerman and the Trayvon Martin case? It just seems
been really tough, yeah, for the community. But I think it really brought to focus this horrible Stand Your Ground law that they passed. I read today that 70% of people who claim the Stand Your Ground law are never arrested, so they just get away with shooting somebody in the street. So that's sort of what, to me, brought that to everybody's attention, what they actually passed here.
So. And it also raises the still unresolved problems of police and race. Gwen, let me ask you, can you give us your take on the continuing saga of the Trayvon Martin case and Mr. Zimmerman's reincarceration?
Well, of course, it's an unfortunate situation, and it's true. It does bring to bear a focus on the Stand Your Ground law and how ridiculously conceived it is. And also, I think it brings up the backing of the Stand Your Ground by the National Rifle Association, who has way too much power politically in this country. We're actually, and I would put this in the Democrat ball court, we're actually missing right now an extraordinary opportunity to highlight the tragedy for putting a spotlight on what the National Rifle Association does as far as laws throughout the country, but certainly here. And that's just, to me, that with all the tragedy, shouldn't we find something that we can pull from it that'll be a light and or a beacon, if you will? And I find that would be, but it doesn't seem that the politicians are, you know, the leadership, if you will, is taking that opportunity.
Thank you, Gwen. Susan, do you want to make a comment on that?
Sure. I mean, I think for me, what it brings to light is the fact that a lot of the pieces of legislation that are passed in our state don't have an organic growth from the street level. They're not created by the people who live here, who have an issue that they want to bring to light and have a problem resolved. These laws are written by people that aren't even from within the state. And like you said, the NRA in particular for this one wrote the law, connected with a legislator, and it was introduced, and quietly it was passed. I mean, I think it was in 2005, I think it went actually twice that year, but it was passed, and nobody thought anything of it. And while what happened with Trayvon Martin was incredibly tragic, and we still don't know exactly what happened that evening, the fact that it brought it out and said, how many other organizations are actually meddling within our state? How many other movements are happening quietly that we're not aware of because we're not paying attention? There was a case also not far from Sanford, where a mother had been convicted for 20 years, I forget her name, because she fired a shot in a house, and there were kids present, and she fired it at her abusive husband. The same scenario. She claimed, you know, the stand your ground law, and it didn't apply to her. And so now she's facing 20 years in prison, and she's got little kids and everything. I mean, there's an incredible hypocrisy here that, you know, that I just think we just need to do something about and pay closer attention to.
Thank you. Thank you. Luis?
Yes, we call this law not the stand your ground law, but the right to kill law. There is a question that I haven't heard anybody ask yet, and that is, was Trayvon Martin entitled to defend himself? After all, the reports are that this young man is on the phone with his girlfriend, and there is somebody that is following him, you see, and that is not being followed up. Did the man, mm-hmm. did the young man have the right to defend himself? And, you know, a young man at his age does what comes first. I don't think that he would have had any chance to think in terms of what, you know, all the complications are. But, you know, what do? I run or I fight.
I'm sorry to interject, Louise, but also the question of if he knew he had a gun, would he have reacted differently? I mean, that gun was concealed.
Right,
you know,
exactly.
He might have chosen not to fight if he realized that there was a gun involved.
Yes, but and this was an individual who was several pounds, almost, you know, twice as big in terms of his weight than the young man, and much older, and he doesn't know who is following him. He doesn't know, and we still don't know who jumped whom, you know, in the whole thing. So I think that there, first of all, why would the police department there leak so much out to the media is a big question. The other one is, essentially, why is it that you say this person with a gun had the right to defend himself, but the other person, well, we don't know? This is ridiculous. It's almost criminal to say somebody, you know, that the one with the gun is the one who has the rights.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a shame. It would be a better world if this trial was able to help us articulate what responsibility of gun ownership, what responsibilities are out there, or people who are self-appointed guardians. But I'm afraid it's probably more than we can hope for. I want to go to another topic that was brought up with a discussion with Representative Pafford, and I know we're in a way making lemonade out of lemons. You know, we see this court ruling and we see the positive part of it. But I want to raise another question. I want to raise a responsibility question with our legislature and with our governor. Let me read you just a little bit of this story. Scott's going to supposedly turn down these and ignore these Justice Department demands. On Thursday, federal court in Florida issued a preliminary injunction against the state for restricting the registration drives, creating a window for those to resume before the August primary elections. Whether that will be appealed by the state or continue to fall is not known, Leak said in a conference call. But that's not all Scott has done to roll back voting rights. The governor has also reversed rules established by his predecessor to reenfranchise an estimated 70,000 nonviolent felons who've served their sentences. Scott imposed a five-year waiting period. They're making it hard to get on the rolls by restricting voter registration drives. They're making it hard to vote by limiting the number of days for early voting. They're shrinking the electorate by making it more difficult with people with felony convictions. They're making it difficult to get driver's licenses. And now they're making it hard to stay on the rolls. Scott's latest gambit is to purge what he alleges are 180,000 non-citizen voters, press political hot buttons, in addition to possibly violating civil rights law, as the Justice Department has informed him. The threatened mass voter purge rekindles memories of the Florida 2000 election, when Democrats lost the presidency by 537 votes. Now, the question I want to ask you is, I asked Senator Representative Pafford this, and he seemed to think there was no way out. But I said, isn't there some responsibility that falls upon a legislature and a governor when they're clearly not just thwarting the will of the people, but they're basically tampering with, destroying the democratic process, limiting voting, making voting more difficult? That is, to me, undermining the very function and structure of government. I want to get your reaction to that. Amy, if you'd start.
Well, I think it's un-American and treasonous, personally. I mean, that is what Americans, what makes America, is trying to get everyone to vote. But they know that the more people turn out to vote, the less likely it is that Republicans will win. Because there's not that many ultra-rich, you know, and they got to bring in, you know, so they got to game the system.
Gwen, you want to react?
Oh, thanks, Rick. I would say that this is by far something that's more agendized by conservatives or neocons. That's also connected to the Tuesday election to recall a governor of another state. It's all connected. There is a pattern. There's a tapestry here, and it's about you know, those who have can take and those who don't want. It's founded in disaster capitalism or money, and I think if we have that bottom line in mind, we can begin to take a very good look at our leadership and ask very different questions when we're voting, you know?
Thank you. Susan?
Well, I guess the first question I have is it the will of the people? I mean, the Republicans have been very good in this state and to garner support not just from the citizens of Florida, but throughout the United States, letting everybody believe that they're on the right side of the law, that all they want to do is have people who are eligible to vote, the ability to vote, and remove everybody else from it. And unfortunately, a lot of people don't understand what the law is and all the laws that our governor is making. What is also, you know, I wonder is what's happening at the level of supervisor of elections, because right now there have been two that have been very public about stating that they're not going to purge the polls, and I believe that was Broward and Miami-Dade. My question is, will other SOEs fall lockstep and say, you know, we're not going to follow the will of the governor because we are following the letter of the law? And I'm wondering if we cannot ask people to reach out and contact their SOEs and say, stand strong according to the law, and not start purging people unless you're absolutely sure that they shouldn't be on the rolls, in addition to the fact of letting people know that the SOEs purge these rolls every single year. This is nothing that's new, and they've been doing it year after year after year. You know, I get the argument all the time of people who are deceased, why should they be on the rolls? And I say they're not, and they won't be, you know, but every year they get purged. You just have to go through that process. So, I think something needs to be done, something really dramatically strong against the governor, because if he gets away with it like it's happened in the past in this state, you know, what are we fighting for? You know, we might as well just give him the key and move somewhere else.
Well, I can tell you that when I contacted our supervisor of elections, she said that she was asked to remove two names, and she refused to do it. So,
well, good for her. And what county is that?
This is Martin County, which is a notoriously right-wing county. So I was very pleased with that, and I'll be sending her a note of thanks and support. So that was good news. Lewis, let me ask you, sir, if you'd weigh in on this issue of Scott's desire to continue to break the law.
Well, essentially what we have here is an extension of what is going on nationwide, and that is that we have the most ideologically oriented Republican Party in the history of the United States and, you know, all political history of the United States. We haven't seen it like that ever. What we're getting is really down to the wire, what I've been looking at and researching is that the way they're looking at it is a big battle between the Republican form of government and democracy. They are out to stop democracy. The real challenge, the real threat, the real fear that they have is the triumph of democracy. The Obama, the election that we just had in 2008 was an incredible shock to them. Why is that? Because the fact that there was a popular election where you had both the Electoral College and the national vote at par. The other one thing is that, when they say Republican form of government, it's where you choose the better citizens to make decisions for you. So in the United States, we just don't realize it. This is not a direct democracy. That's what we want, but that's not what they want. What they want is the republic, the one part, and you're seeing it where they're coming up with rules and laws, and there are even statements recently that say, well, if certain people who do not own property, they should not, and don't pay taxes, they should not vote. Students should not vote because they don't pay taxes. All that kind of garbage, follows a pattern of thought. And that pattern of thought is that only certain people ought to have the right to vote. And that is what is happening. We need to awake to that fact that democracy is under challenge. It is our task to protect that democracy and to see that it triumphs, because they are out to take it down.
Well, thank you so much, all of you, for those comments. We've talked a lot about state issues. I want to take us to the national and international level for a couple more questions. So I want to thank you for everything you've said so far. And I'm afraid, like so many political things, these are not easy questions. I want to ask you to reflect for just a minute. Our government has seemed to embrace this new technology of drone warfare. It's seen fit to cross international lines. We're sending missiles into Yemen. We're sending missiles that we know of into Pakistan. Who knows what other countries are benefiting from this drone warfare. And I want to ask you, we just had Memorial Day. And with that, there was a great national expression of appreciation for the good work done by men and women under arms in this country. And I have to say I had some mixed emotions, because I'm afraid that too often some of those men and women under arms who are doing their best in most cases to serve their country and to help their fellows, I'm afraid that too often they've been misused and their lives have been spent too casually. I'm thinking of the war against the WMDs that didn't exist. I want to ask you, do you have concerns about the ongoing war in Yemen and in Pakistan with these drones? Let me ask you first, Luis, for this one.
Yes, I'm very concerned. It is an extension of this preemptive attacks type of mentality. It is a continuation of the Bush attitude of we go out and hit everybody. The other one thing is that we have the imperial prerogative, if you will. That imperative to go out there and just do all these things anywhere in the globe at any given time. It is acting on our own, doing all these things without. There are all kinds of mechanisms in the world. Interpol, for one of them, to mention, where criminals are. Are chased and are followed and that type of thing. But we are working beyond that. And you know, those are what you have mentioned is only one or two steps in it. There are far more involvements that are not being mentioned right now. We are getting in South America. You see, Yemen is, yes, they talk about, oh, Al-Qaeda is there. You know, I don't know. Who do Al-Qaeda people have IDs? You know, they wear their cards and all that to identify them. Is this an extension of, you know, the Cold War era where you just accuse somebody of being a communist and they're a target? How many dictatorships just labeled people communists so that they could get rid of them? In Argentina, in Chile, in Central America, it's more of the same. We keep doing the same thing over and over again, and with the drone attacks, it's now so easy to just kill at a distance. People are not aware of what is going on, and by the time they find out, they still don't get an idea of what went on because somebody tells you, oh, yes, we caught this or that person, they never tell you about the people who were casualties,
right,
who had absolutely nothing to do with the whole thing.
Thank you.
Innocent beings.
Thank you. Susan.
You know, I think drones are just an evolution of war. And I think the real issue is whether we belong there, whether it's through boots on the ground or whether it's through drones. Just like Luis said, you know, the wars fought with drones are fought in a room in Arizona where people are on computers that are like computer games. And it's cleaner, it's quicker, and it's more to the point because the casualties are only one-sided. So, you know, when you ask my feeling about drones versus feeling about our soldiers, you know, I don't think that's really the issue. I think it's whether we're entitled to be there, we have a place to be there. I think it's also a question of, like Luis said, you know, we can't seem to figure out how to get out. We can't seem to figure out how to stop. And we just go in fighting in hopes that it'll work itself out without ever having a true exit plan. And I don't mean an exit plan saying by a certain date we'll start bringing soldiers home. I mean a real understanding of what it is to go in, assist someone or protect our interests, and then come home. Because even with Iraq, as much as we're happy to say that we're out of there and it's over, it's really not. We built a base there that we have a 100-year lease for. We're going to be there forever, and I think, you know, the drones itself are just a cog in the wheel of the military complex that we've created.
Thank you. Gwen.
I'm an occupier, and by definition, I'm a nonviolent resistor of all war right now, and I think that... this country especially. Did anybody hear Jeremy Shahill, I believe is his name, The Nation, on Up with Chris Hayes this morning?
No.
He brought some incredible evidence to light. He was over in the town in Yemen. And he brought back the evidence, photographic and bystander or, you know, witnesses to
right.
the event, and the photography of unexploded bombs that we've rained down on them over there. And Mr. Shahill accused our president of being a murderer because he okayed these drone attacks for one person on flimsy evidence and killed so many innocents. And I think the point, and I don't say that on your show, Rick, lightly. I'm saying it very respectfully to the rest of my panelists here. I don't mean to be inflammatory. I'm just bringing to light from the question you asked Where is our humanity, and who are we choosing as our leaders? And to say that it's like, well, we're there, we have to deal with it, until we begin to ask these questions and make change, we're going to have the same old, same old. And it's just, we can't, at 7 billion plus every second on this planet right now, with corporation poison just pumping out into our environment, where are our grandchildren and our children going, you know? Those are the larger questions.
Thank you. Amy, what do you think about this drone warfare?
Well, the question you started out with was our soldiers and all, and as a veteran, I have to maybe respectfully disagree with some of your panelists, because I think that Barack Obama has been a great commander-in-chief, and he has taken out our enemies, and he has got us out of Iraq, and now he's getting us out of Afghanistan as of next year. Now, the drone attacks, I do believe, though, need to be, I think, vetted in Congress. I mean, it's the people's business who we're killing. So I do agree that I think we need to have more discussion on it. I mean, but on the other hand, if our military is out in the world, I'd sure rather send a drone than a whole battalion of soldiers and have them die. So there's good and bad, I guess.
I can certainly appreciate those thoughts. My concern about our veterans is this. I don't think that we have an honest and serious commitment to rehabilitate them. I think that we have had largely a palliative, and investigation after investigation has shown that they're not getting the medical care that they need. They're not getting the mental health care that they need. And while that is weighed on the one hand against putting a machine at risk rather than human beings at risk, and that, in fact, makes the machine better, I'm just concerned that the easier it is to send a machine to war, those who benefit from the business of war will find their way easier and easier when war is conducted from behind a screen 5,000 miles away, and that's my secondary concern.
First, I'd
just like to see these men and women be taken care of as they should be, and not left to their own device to find what care they can.
It's our advantage to take care of them. I read the other day that the reason America became strong was that before World War II, only 6% of Americans had a college degree. And after the veterans came back, they didn't know what to do with them, so they decided to send them all to college. And after they got done going through school, we had 20% of Americans with a college degree, and then all of a sudden we had the big boom that made our country strong. So it's important what we do to our veterans.
Absolutely.
Okay,
just a couple more things, and then we'll be finishing up today. I can't thank you all enough for spending your time here. I think you've been very generous, and you've been very candid, and I can't help but thank you so much, because the value of good, honest witnessing, I think, is immeasurable, and I thank you so much for joining me. The next question is another difficult one. This is a story from Reuters. U.S. rights activists condemned a lack of disclosure in the case against WikiLeaks suspect Bradley Manning, saying there was even less transparency in his case than in proceedings against alleged September 11th attackers. A coalition headed by the Center for Constitutional Rights filed a petition against asking the Army to order the judge in the Manning court-martial to allow access to government papers, court orders, transcripts, and proceedings, none of which has made public to date. Manning, whose trial is scheduled to start on September 21st, is accused of aiding the enemy and dozens of other charges over his alleged leaking of documents, a charge that carries a potential life sentence. Manning allegedly leaked hundreds of thousands of military logs from Iraq and Afghanistan and U.S. diplomatic cables to WikiLeaks between November 2009 and May 2010, when he served as a low-ranking intelligence estimate. The lack of access to these legal documents in the Manning case amounts to denial of public's First Amendment rights, and clearly erroneous, and amounts to usurpation of authority, the campaign petition. The contrast with the degree of public access provided for in the military commissions underway at Guantanamo is striking. Courtroom proceedings at Guantanamo commissions are underway, The courtroom proceedings at Guantanamo are open to the public observers and are available via live viewing domestically via closed-circuit television. Transcripts of these courtroom proceedings are posted in a time frame comparable to that provided for high-profile criminal cases. Manning, 24, last month, faced pretrial hearings in Fort Meade near the U.S. Capitol. Earlier proceedings against him in that same base were conducted largely outside public view, and those who signed Farley's petition said. Let me ask you this, ladies and gentlemen. We all know that this is an important case. Ellsberg and many others have said that the documents released were not at the same level of secrecy that the Pentagon Papers were. And, of course, Ellsberg did not face 20 years in prison. Let me ask you, do you think the government is being fair and even-handed in the Manning case? And let me ask you first, Luis.
The answer to that is no. Number one is the first thing is that the habeas corpus was thrown out with the adoption of FISA during the Bush administration.
Let me ask you to be succinct.
Yes. Yes. The FISA was just did away with the individual's right to a defense. And to call out the witnesses against him and who is accusing him on the one thing. And the other one thing is that we still don't know all of the facts, but this person was put into a situation where all his rights were taken away from him, and he's been kept in prison without a just and quick trial as the Constitution demands.
Thank you, sir. Susan.
Yes. Well, the problem for me is that I don't really know the whole case of WikiLeaks. And to be honest with you, I'm really on a fence about it. I don't believe that there – I don't know enough to have an actual position on it. It does concern me, as always, but, you know, if I think back to the 9/11 Commission – and how we spent so much time and effort and months putting something together, and then when it was finally released to the public, 90% of it was redacted. So I'm led to believe and err on what Louis said, that, you know, my inclination is to say that they're not being fair and they're not being open.
Thank you. Gwen, let me ask you to be brief so I get everybody in.
Certainly, I'll be very brief. I think what's going on is wrong. I support Bradley Manning and Julian Assange and their vision for a more humane world.
Thank you so much, Gwen. Amy, let me ask you to wrap it up.
Okay, I just think he's a citizen, and I don't think he's being treated as an American citizen with his rights. That's all.
Well, thanks so much. I can't thank you all enough for coming and joining us tonight and sharing your opinions. You are voices that I value tremendously here in the state of Florida. The work that you do every day is just amazing, and I know each of you is working on three or four major issues probably every day, and thank you for that. And on behalf of myself and my co-producer, Mickey Royce, I want to thank you all for joining me, and I hope you can join me again soon. Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you, everybody.
Okay. Bye-bye and good night, folks.
Good night, all.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
Good night. Well, friends.
Good night. Great company.
I hope you enjoyed the show tonight. It was very interesting talking to these great people, hearing their opinions, letting them share some thoughts. And next week, Progressive News Network will be interviewing some authors who write on progressive news issues. Hope you like the show. Please write us if you have anything to say. Thanks so much. Keep up the good work. See what you can do to help Wisconsin. See what you can do to help the PDA get more progressives elected. That's PinellasPDA@yahoo.com. PinellasPDA@yahoo.com. Thanks a lot. I'm Rick Spezak, News Director of Progressive News Network. I want to thank you for joining us. I want to thank our sponsors, Imagineering Productions and the Media Goddess Worldwide. These shows are brought to you to make sure that you can hear the progressive voices that you need to hear from across the state. We had the West Coast, Broward and the Palm Beaches represented. We had the Space Coast represented tonight, the Gainesville area, and of course, the good people of Florida. Thanks a lot, everybody. We'll see you next week. Thank you.